From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. All right, so we were on a little break. We had a couple of extra episodes that we ran while we were on holiday.
Yep.
And now we're ready to dig back into...
We're doing more WinDBG. We've returned to the series. And today we're looking at hang type issues. And so for the last lot of weeks over Christmas, which we had pre-taped, we went through... how to look at analyzing crashes and stuff like that, and bug checks and user crashes and how to collect those things. And we dug deeper into driver verify to pull the bad stuff out of the kernel. And then a couple weeks ago, we looked at how you look at memory, so you get an idea of what the state of the world is. And then last week, we did the SDK upgrade, which was well overdue. And now we're back into WinDBG again, user mode, and we're going to look at particularly synchronization objects. Synchronization objects are the reasons why Windows waits, or sorry, an application waits on something. So,
and there's a few different kinds of hangs, right? How many are there, and what are the different types?
Well, you can get a CPU one where it just goes into an infinite loop and just never comes out, and then that's kind of obvious where you see a nice big spike in the CPU graph on Task Manager or something. But then you have the other type where it just goes completely silent. And you have two types. There's hangs which last... seconds, which may be an issue, or hours, but there's ones that just never recover due to, you know, deadlocking, orphan reason, stuff like that. So what we're going to talk about today is the primitives that everything's based on. Whether you do like a file operation or a network operation, whatever it is, you will eventually hit one of these four primitives, and Chad's going to go through those four primitives for us. And then you use the primitives in different ways because they just kind of, I don't know, address certain scenarios better than each other. Mainly more of them to do with multi-threading and control of multi-threading. So the four objects are, what are they? So
critical section, event, semaphore, and mutex, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So if we kind of take those, I guess we can take them one by one.
Yeah.
So event is something that you'll see a lot, used a lot for synchronizing different threads. And there's really two basic types of events. There's a sort of an automatic reset event, and then there's sort of a manual reset event. And you can think of this sort of the differences, like an automatic event is gets signaled once. One thread that has called wait for single object to wait on that event will get signaled and that's know that it can go, and then that event will get reset. So it's kind of like you're opening the door for one person at a time, letting one thread go. The other way is the manual reset events, where once you say, hey, I want to signal that event, then anybody who said they want to wait for that event will get signaled, even if there's 10 of them. They'll all get signaled, and they'll all stay signaled. In fact, if they are in a loop where maybe they keep calling wait for single object on that event, they will keep getting signaled until someone explicitly closes that door.
So it's kind of like just, in that case, it's kind of like just looking at a Boolean variable and going, okay, if that's true, we'll continue. If it's false, it's not.
But yeah, you could think of it that way. And occasionally that will also even manifest as kind of the high CPU type of scenario that you were talking about. We had an issue recently that I debugged where a thread was kind of just going crazy, 100% CPU, and you get in there and look at it, and it's looping, and it says, hey, wait for this event. If you get this event, then do something. Well, it turns out that the other thread had signaled that event and then kind of gone away and errored out or something and forgot to ever reset it. So this other thread stays signaled and just keeps on acting on that event over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So events are used pretty commonly. You see that a lot.
You are going to at least 50% of the things you wait on are events, at least.
Yeah, that's probably very, very common.
Yeah.
Mutexes are another one, and I showed a mutex demo a few weeks ago. I forget.
I think it's more. I think it's months ago now.
A few months ago now, where a particular thread will create an object, a kernel object that's is called a named mutex, for example. And then the nice thing about mutexes is they can be sort of cross-processed very easily. So other threads, other processes can even go and look for that and say, oh, there's already a mutex created with that name, and I can go. The idea with a mutex is it's a mutually exclusive object, so someone will take ownership of that and say, I own this, and no one else can do anything until I release it.
The main reason it uses to make programs single instance.
Yes.
So, like, if a program's already running, it'll take out the mutex and say, hey, I'm running, I own this, I own the ability to run. And then if another program runs, separate program, it tries to take it out, it goes, hey, I can't take it out, someone already owns it. Oh, the other person must already be running.
Right.
And then some of them, if they're even smarter, they'll actually send a message to the original process and say, hey, come to the foreground, for example.
Right.
So a lot of programs which are, as I said, single instancing, will use that technique.
Yeah, you used to see that a lot. I suppose you probably still do. Like if you open one file, then a Word document and Word will open up. Mm. You go to open up another Word document, maybe it runs in the same original Word process rather than opening up another copy of Word. You know, those kinds of scenarios are enabled by mutexes because when Word starts, it creates a mutex that it goes and looks for.
Represents that file,
Represents an instance of running Word.
Yeah.
So that's one. Let's see, what else did we have?
Semaphore.
Semaphore is sort of associated with a number. So a semaphore, you can signal it and say, I will give it a number 3, and then 3 people who are waiting will get signaled. So it's sort of an optimization.
So it's kind of like an event in that way. Instead of saying only one person is released when you've got it on the automatic mode, you say, hey, release 3 people.
Release 3 of them, and maybe there's 3 worker threads hanging out there, or maybe there's 10 worker threads, and you say, oh, I want 3 of them to go now, so you can signal that.
So you might be doing some work where you queue 3 things into a queue. Okay, I've queued 3 things. I know I need the 3 workers to go do it.
Right.
Single it.
Right.
And what's the last one?
Critical
sections.
Section. So you can talk us.
Yeah, that's my critical sections. One of my favorite. I tend to use them a lot in my code. Critical sections one of the interesting ones. You use it for enter and exiting critical regions of code, and usually it's because you're modifying data that, in a multi-threading sense, if 2 people were to do it at the same time. You'll get corruption. And the easiest way to explain it is, let's say you wanted to add 1 to a variable. So, and I'll use 2 as an example. Let's say you're thread 1 and you're thread 2, and we're going to just add 1 to A. So you'll read A out of memory, and say it's equal to 5 at the moment, right? And then you're going to put it into a register. At the exact same time, you make the same decision, and you read A out of memory, and you have 5 in your register. Then you add 1 to your register, so it turns into 6. You do the same thing, kind of in sync. And then you store 6 back into A, right? And then you do it. So collectively, we didn't get to 7. And that's what it's for. It's to guard regions. And, you know, it's more complex than that normally. You do it around, you know, linked lists and all that type of stuff. But everything that needs an atomic, like transactional change to the data, you protect it. So you enter a critical section. Only one person can own, it's much like a mutex really, it's very close to the same concept, can own a region. You go in there, you own exclusive ownership of it, and then you release it, and then that means nobody owns it, and then someone else can pick it up. With a mutant, you try to get it, and you either do or don't get it. You don't wait for it to come back. With a critical section, you try to get it, and if you don't get it, you just sit there and wait.
And by the way, mutant is the same thing as mutex. Sometimes you'll see those two used kind of interchangeably for obscure historical reasons.
Yeah. Well, the object in the kernel that does the mutex code actually is called a mutant. So, critical section is also interesting in that way because when it was first developed back in N231, it was actually a call to the kernel. And so you would enter in user mode, you would write this code, and then it would go, hey, I have to get the kernel to synchronize this concept, and so it transitions into the kernel, which is quite expensive. Syscall's not exactly cheap. And then all of the holding and the hanging would be implemented in the kernel, and then when you get released, you'd come back up into user mode. And they realized that it was a barrier to performance, and so over the years, they've actually changed the critical section implementation many, many times. And now I believe the way it works is, I'm not an expert in this in any way, but I believe the way it works is it tries to take it out. If it can take it out in user mode, it does. It negotiates for a very small amount of time in user mode, and then if it fails, then it falls back to actually using an event to actually achieve the goal. And so one person will, everybody waits for an event, one person gets fired saying, hey, you're ready. And so it turns it into a queue metaphor. And so your critical section now is actually an event-based user thing, much more performant than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
They're always trying to optimize the operating system and make it more scalable, especially as, you know, systems get more and more processors. You know,
yeah.
You've got a server with 64 processors, you've got to make sure this stuff is very performant and scalable.
There's a great video by Arun Kishan on the Going Deep blog by Charles about the removal of dispatcher lock in Windows 7. And that particular lock, much like this user locks we're talking about, this happened to be in the kernel, but... you know, once you got to 128 processors or more, it was just causing the whole thing just to dive as everybody was fighting for this one piece of this one event. So, and the same thing can happen in the user mode code. If you overscale your machine, you can make it so that the whole thing goes linear. And there's a, I've seen a talk, I'm not sure where I saw it, but they used the parallel library and split out like a 200 worker threads to work on this task. But the problem is everybody had to use memory. And so it didn't matter that you had 200 threads because you still got limited by the critical sections and events that protect the heap manager and stuff, so which is a centralized resource. So in this case, even though you paralyzed it out, okay, I think it was to the number of cores he had. So he had 16 cores, and so he made 16 threads. It actually ran slower than running it just by one thread because it had all this contention. And so we'll look at that topic contention stuff in great detail when we finally get to Windows Performance Toolkit, which has a what's called weight analysis in it, which can tell you, how everything's going wrong. All right, let's dive into some code. Should we do that?
Let's get some
WinBag going. So what I did is I've written a whole lot of programs. What I wrote was, there's all my crashing programs, and then I've got all these critical section programs, and we've got some more ones that we'll see over the next couple of episodes as we go into how you look at things.
You're a really bad programmer. All these programs crash.
These ones don't. These ones hang.
Oh,
yeah, that's better.
So we'll start off with a straight hang, and I'll show you how this what this program does. What am I doing? So we'll start off with a 64-bit one. What this guy's going to do is there's the main thread that starts. Everybody starts as one thread, and then it's up to you to decide to make more threads. And what this guy did is he made a critical section, which is this guy here, this first line. And then he he tried to enter the critical section. He came out the other side of the enter call, which is enter critical section. And he then owned it. So you can see thread 860 owned it. And then he made three threads. And you can see that then he went to sleep for 10 seconds just to make this demo a bit more linear, otherwise it would happen like that. And then he left the critical section. And so these three threads that he made also tried to enter the critical section. And because he owned it, they had to wait.
Right.
And what you're seeing here is when the original thread 860, which is this guy up here, left the critical section, 734 picked it up, right? He finished his enter call. And then what I'm getting to do, so he actually has some work to do, is I'm getting him to write hello world to a new file 1 million times. And I found on my box I have to do it 1 million times to actually make it wait more than like 5 seconds. Pretty impressive that you can create a file, write to it, close the file and delete the file 1 million times in about 5 seconds. It's pretty amazing actually. And so what you would see, I should have brought Task Manager, is one thread had the critical section and then another thread grabbed it. In this case, he then did his file operations, which would have caused 100% CPU power. And then he leaves his critical section. And then in this case, the thread ends when he's finished his work. Because he leaves the critical section, someone else owns it and then repeats three times. Once all three guys have owned it, there's code in the original thread to say, once three workers have done their work, finish the program, right? So what we're going to do is, at the same time as this guy running, let's get some proc dumps of this. Make sure that we actually have a proc dump that's half decent. Yeah, that's good. I don't know if maybe people know about the where command. It tells you where Windows will resolve an exe name to.
That's handy.
Yeah.
I didn't know about
that. So there's more than one. I don't know if it's going to work for Notepad.
I learned something.
Yeah, so Notepad's actually in the operating system twice. There's actually a hard link between the two, so it's only on the OS, on the disk once, but anyway, we recommend. So what I'm going to do is, when we hit one of these, when I'm in the middle of creating a million files, this cake, it will take a dump then. So we'll take a full dump, MA for full dump, and we're going to do it for a program called, what's it called, CritSec something. Procdump is like star on the end. As long as there's only one, it will pick it up, and we'll put the dump files in dumps. So at the appropriate time, I'm going to press enter. Now, I could have used CPU triggers for this and all these other techniques in procdump to automatically pick it up, but just for simplicity, I'm going to do it manually, and you'll understand why. So right now, actually, we'll grab one right now. So this is when the original thread is started. So there's three guys who are waiting on this first guy who is sleeping. This guy is now making a million files. And then I've caught it then. So let's open these guys up in the debugger. Start's the other program that doesn't get used enough.
Yeah, my favorite use of that is start space period to
open the current folder.
Explorer view of your current folder.
So I've deliberately got rid of all the symbols for this on this box because I want to show how you can actually get to root cause knowing nothing, right? So if we just look at every single thread right now, and this is something you kind of find that you're doing a lot when you're just trying to do a hang analysis, get a broad idea of what's going on and then narrow down. So we can see that thread zero, this first guy is sleeping. This is the first dump, so he was sleeping for 10 seconds, and the other three guys are sitting there waiting.
Well, it looks like you don't have symbols for your crit set.
We have public symbols. The scourge of private versus public.
Well, I mean for your own.
No, I deliberately got rid of it because it pops up the source code and makes it really obvious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I made it so that...
Oh, you're making things hard on yourself.
Yeah. And so then you can see... these other threads that we've made, that they've entered a critical section. And as I said, remember how I said how we've changed the implementation? Well, this is a contended version of that. And so this is the operating system trying to optimize the approach. So if nobody owned the critical section, it would have been a very lightweight acquiring of it. And as you can see that in this version, in Windows 8's version, it's got these new function names. So this is waiting for an object, and actually it's waiting for an event. But what object it's waiting on associated with that is actually the critical section object, right?
So critical sections are actually implemented as
events now, if they're contended. Mm-hmm. So you have to get used to it, but there is actually, it's different in every OS. But the concept's roughly the same. Yeah. You'll see that you're entering, and then there's another thread here that's entering as well. And there's another thread here that's entering as well, right? Because you see these words, critical section, you know there's a critical section object flying around. Let's just change to thread 3, which is tilde for thread command 3. I chose from here. And S is set as current. If I do a K now, it becomes my current. If I do a KV, we get lots of arguments. And this is where 64-bit and x86 hurt you. If I did the same thing here in x86, the parameters are passed on the stack, not in registers. And actually, the critical section's value is actually right here, is one of the values. So you can just grab the address and use it. This may actually be it, because this is passing from frame to frame to frame, it may have been pushed, and that actually may be it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying use that directly, because in other versions of the OS, that's not true. It doesn't exist. So what you need to do is get the debugger to help you. Right, and the way that you do that is there is a command called bangcs for critical section. And what this does is dumps out every single critical... Actually, I'll do a CLS first. It dumps out every single critical section object in your process because it's an object that you make with the operating system, so it knows about their existence and it keeps record of them. And so you see these ones here, there's to do with the process heap and various other reasons. And most of these are not locked. You can see how it says not locked. And then here's the loader lock. So when you're opening a DLL, it takes out a lock. So only one thread can load a DLL at once, for example. And then here's our one down the bottom from. And even though we don't have symbols, it still can tell us it came from our module because the memory is compiled into the module. You'll see that it says it's locked, and unsurprisingly, the lock count is 3. There's 3 processes, 3 threads at the moment waiting for it. And currently, the owner is this 1008A. And so, you know, what's that? Is that a pointer? What it is actually the thread ID. And the tilde command, just the straight tilde command, lists our threads. And so 1008A is this guy. Here it is. So this is our process ID on the front, so A64. If you want to turn that into decimal, question mark, do some math, there's our PID. And there's, so this guy, thread 0, owns the critical section, and if we did this across the board, by looking at the stack, what we can do is hopefully find who is exactly waiting on that. And so this is the pointer of the object itself, the actual structure that represents the critical section. So it's 35D0 on the end, and if we do KV, we actually are very lucky that in the Windows 8 case, because of this frame upon frame passing, you actually do get the object in here. And so what we can do is, across the board, we can print out all the stacks with in verbose mode, and then those last 3, we can go, well, that guy's waiting on it, that guy's waiting on it, that guy's waiting on it, and then this guy, thread 0, is the person that from the Bang CS. We can do that. There's actually a faster way to do it. Bang CS is listing out every lock, and so we may be up on one of those top ones, and you have to search through for locked rather than not locked. Mm-hmm. There's actually a command, and it comes from NTSD. There has been a lot of debug extensions over the years who know how to tackle this problem. Particularly, there was one called SIEXTPUB, so SIEXT public. We officially do not support that anymore, and you will find that it's completely been stripped from Microsoft.com. It had a command called critlist. This is the only command that's the closest to that command. Unfortunately, it isn't as powerful, but we have got this one left. And so what you have is bang locks. And what this will tell you is it will just show you who's contended, right? So roughly the same thing as bang CS, but it filters out all the ones that don't matter. Unfortunately, it doesn't tell you who's waiting on it, right? And so that's what bang critlist did in SIEXT. So if you want to, you know, download some of that from some dodgy site, go for it. But it hasn't been upgraded for years. I have no idea whether it works on Windows, even Vista 7 or 8. It was deprecated a long time ago. So this guy has 3 guys waiting on thread 0, and then so we can go to thread 0, and this is what you do. You go, okay, all those guys are waiting on this. There's a lot of people who are waiting on a lock. This is the person who owns the lock. Mm. Let's change that thread. So we can, through the tilde command, we can look it up, but you actually, if you want to do it the more complex way, is the equivalent of that tilde command with the set for a thread ID is you do tilde tilde square brackets S. I have no idea who designed that, but that's what they did. And then you can look at the thread who's hung. Now, in this case, it's asleep, and it's not really the obvious why, right? You don't really have any evidence of what they were trying to do, why they would own the lock, right? Because this thing's completely not helping you with symbol names and stuff. So let's look at the second dump. In this case, you just go, that's kind of weird. Someone's sleeping when they're holding a lock. And you go, well, that's weird.
Bad for performance.
Yeah. So let's look at this other one, which had the file one. So what happened was that 0 used to have it, and now it released it, and then it allowed one of those other 3 threads, the worker ones, to go do some work, right?
So in this case, this is a dump you took a little bit later.
This is the second one now, yeah. We're doing the file operation. Mm-hmm. And so we've got 4 threads still. In this case, 137 owns the lock, which is the first thread I made, it happens to be. And so what you can do is just change to that guy, and we will look. And he's actually leaving a critical section right now, which is actually kind of weird timing. The critical section isn't the critical section that we're waiting on, weirdly. This is actually doing that 1 million crate files, right? And so what you can tend to get is a, I don't know what's the word for it, like a lock of a lock. So a chain of locks, maybe, if you could call it that. So like these 3 guys are waiting on Larry, but Larry's waiting on Chad, right? You may be waiting for take out a lock, a critical section that you may own, and you may be sleeping.
And then, you could talk about deadlocks. I don't know if you want to go there.
I've got an example of that. We'll go there. Yeah. So in this case, you go, there is four threads, and if we look at this, if we look at the four, we go, the first guy is sleeping, okay? So it looks exactly the same as before, but it actually is in a different state. He doesn't own a lock anymore, right? And this is why I specifically made this example, because things that look the same actually can be different, right? And if you actually compare the two, this number here changes. We are at a slightly different offset in the function, so we know that we've made a slight bit of progress difference. Thread one owns the lock, and you go, he owns the lock because he's doing a buttload of create files, right?
So there's locks around create file, basically.
Yeah, and I did this in a really tight loop just to show, to know that I'll get something in a dump file. But it's much more common that he'll take out a lock, and it's the scenario I gave before, is he may be actually himself waiting for something else, and it's usually an event, right? And so what it might be is he's made a network call, so he might be doing a DNS lookup for some reason, and that's taking a long time, or whatever call you can think of that takes a long time. And then he's himself is waiting. The other one that's very common is in big servers is you're waiting for disk, right? Mm-hmm. It's doing a huge amount of disk I.O., and it's waiting for the disk I.O. to finish. It will finish its work, say it's SQL Server Exchange or something that's really disk intensive, some intensive operation. And then when he's finished, he will release the object, and then the next person will get it. And that critical section may represent the file on disk, the database or whatever it is. In this case, yes, it's just doing a file I.O. He is currently trying to work out the file name he will use. So this function actually manages the file name I passed, which was not fully qualified, and it works out exactly where on the hard drive it's going to be, what its 8.3 file name is going to be, all that type of uniqueness that it needs to know. Actually had to, it's in a leave critical section. It was weird timing that, he obviously just owned the critical section associated with full path name resolution, and he's currently leaving it. Which means he may actually own it, but anyway. And then the other two are waiting. And so it's a good example of a chain of events. These two are waiting on thread one. When thread one finishes his job, one of those two will get a go. So the hang, you would say, is associated with the stack. And then it's just a matter of reading the stack, understanding the context of that stack, determining if he himself is waiting on someone else, and then following the chain somewhere else. All right, so that's hang analysis for critical sections. And if we let this program go, it comes to a clean end. One person got the lock, did some work, released it. He finished his he didn't have any reason to exist anymore. He closed down the thread, and then the primary thread noticed that all three workers had done their job, which is in this case make 3 million files, and then he gracefully exited. So I have another example, and the name itself is kind of going to give away what happened is. It's a critical section orphan, which is kind of like what Chad was talking about, the event. Someone forgot to do something. And so what we're going to do is run this guy. Actually, I'll do a clear screen. Ugh. How often do you do that, Chad?
More often
than not?
More often.
exactly the same program. I commented out one line of code. Right? And what I commented out was the worker thread went into the critical section, but he forgot to leave it, right? And this happens a lot in exception handling.
Yeah.
You have all this logic way down in the bowels of some program with very clean enter, do some work, leave, but you don't have an exception handler down there. And then the exception handler is way, way back up with a couple of frames, a couple of functions. They catch the exception and went, that wasn't good. Oh, we can continue on. We'll just log that. But they missed the leave from way, way down in the stack. And so you get what's called an orphan, or not an orphan, but that's what's it called when you enter but don't ever leave? I know, it's a logic error.
Yeah.
This case is the orphan case is actually a specific name. And you'll notice that we made the three people, we waited, we left it, and then one of the workers worked, so the first worker worked. I own it, I did the whole thing, and then I forgot to leave the critical section.
Nice of you to tell us that.
Yeah. And so this thing's just jammed, and this is a good example of something you do see, this type of jam where it just never comes back. You know, and when you get your gray screen on a Windows program and it's, you know, not responding,
yeah,
that's a very good example of that. So let's take a full dump of that guy, and let's look at the orphan one instead. Once again, we start off by just doing a general look at what the whole ecosystem looks like.
Tilda Star K.
And there's also the Bang. Was it Bang Threads? No, Bang Thread just gives you the information about the thread context. But once again, the first guy is sleeping. He did his initial work. He left the critical section, and then he allowed some other thread, worker thread, to pick up the critical section. So he's just sleeping, waiting for the whole program to finish. This guy, thread one, is actually waiting for a critical section contended, and this guy is waiting for critical section attended. So at this moment, there's actually only two worker threads, all right? I talked about the numbering in WinDBG a while ago. The numbers 0, 1, 2, they are actually, if I had caught this process a little bit earlier, it would have been 0, 1's the one that's missing, and 2 and 3. And so WinDBG reorders. And this is an example where you can have two dump files that are taken at different times, and the numbering in WinDBG is different. And it's because threads have exited, right?
With these numbers here, the 778, FC0, and EFC should stay the same for the life exactly. of the thread.
So if you know that the third thread is EFC, you can go tilde tilde square brackets EFC set, and you will know your always will change to that thread regardless of what numbering order it's in. So let's do a bang locks again, which is how you find out what the critical section state is. We see that, you know, we're going to do bang locks because we saw critical section on some of the stacks, or enter critical section on some of the stacks. And in this case, a thread called F9C owns the critical section. And as you'll see, it's not in the in the list. So
that's kind of a red flag.
Yeah, it's a massive red flag.
The thread that owns this resource doesn't exist.
Yeah, and this is orphan. This is called a critical section orphan, and it just cannot recover from this. It was never happen. So
this program will never proceed, essentially.
Yeah, and so what you do is you do, whenever you see critical sections on the stack or enter critical sections on the stack, you do tilde tilde square brackets F9C set, and if it comes up with a thread, that's the person to blame, or he's waiting on something else to blame. If it comes up with this, you know it's an orphan, so that's kind of easy. The last case is more of a logic error. And it's the deadlock case, which is what you alluded to. So what this guy is doing is he's making two critical sections, and I've named them just one and two, right? The primary thread, it's probably a little bit hard to read it in this output, but thread number one is called Larry thread number one. You take out number one. Actually, I got taught this actually by using props.
Nine guys, yeah. I hope.
Nine guy yeah. props.
So you do that and you can use your coffee cup. So you own number one.
Yes.
Right? And you're a kid and you're not willing to let go until you get what you want.
I'm like that.
You picked up your coffee cup first, number two. You're not willing to proceed and do your job until you have the nine guy and a coffee every morning. Right?
Right.
That's so every morning.
You're waiting for Chad to give for the coffee cup, your turn to have the coffee cup.
You can't have it. It's mine. Yeah.
You aren't willing to work until you have the Channel 9 guy.
I need that 9 guy, that exact 9 guy, okay. Before I will do anything.
And so this is what deadlock is. It's when you take out, when there's two synchronization objects, and this can be events, it can be critical sections, it can be any of those things. If you don't take them out in the same order, you can have this race condition. And you see the classic deadlock case is exactly this. It's a two-way deadlock. You also can have a three-way deadlock saying, I'm not willing to work until I have that. You're not willing to work until I have that. I'm not willing to work until you have that. I don't have to have all three, but if there's a chain of linkage between them, you can have a three-way or up to n-way deadlock. The way you get around it is you write your code in a way that's hierarchical. You say, if I want to have a coffee cup, I have to have a Channel 9 guy in my hand first. So you put that down, and until you pick that up, you're not allowed to pick up a coffee cup.
Right.
right? Actually, we should do the other way around. You can't start the day with, everybody has to start the day with a coffee, then you'll go do work.
Then you get to know. That's right.
So what you do is you set a hierarchy. So what you do is you might have some very small granular thing, but if you're about to do a big concept, you take out the small one first, then you do take out the bigger one, and you decide which one has the highest precedence. The one that you choose to do first is the most contended, the one you do second is the least contended. And so what we can do is this guy's done that. The first guy, Larry, took out the first lock, and then the next thread took out the second lock, and they're both waiting for each other. So we'll take a dump file of that and see what it looks like.
But neither's going to release the one they have until they can get the
one
they
don't have. No, because they're petty children.
That's right.
Take that any way you like, guys. All right, so let's have a look at the dump bucket.
Did you just call me? Never mind.
I called you a child, not petty. So let's have a look at all those stacks again. And so we have four stacks again. The first one, stack zero, is waiting for a critical section. But there's no real indication on there that we own it, right, on the stack. The one is waiting for a critical section. This is waiting for a critical section. And this is waiting for a critical section. And so you look at this and go, everybody's waiting for a critical section. How can there be contention? But you have to remember that there's more than one critical section object.
Which is not immediately obvious from just looking at the stack.
Correct. So if you see everybody in a state where you think that they have no reason to complain, that you know what you want to do is bang locks again. And in this case, you'll get two back. And we can see that object FD0, 8D0 owns it, and then object F8, my dyslexia is kicking in today, is owned by this guy. And then if we do a tilde, we can see that there's that one and this one are the two who are waiting. So what you need to do in this case is owning thread is 10EC, so we'll go to this guy. And we can see that he himself is waiting. What you do is a KV, and then you say, hopefully you'll get a critical section out of this. If it's not in the stack, it'll be in a register. And actually, I think in this case,
looks
it
like
is.
There's some handle numbers on the stack up there, too.
Yeah, well, that's because we're waiting on an event.
Yeah.
In this case, in 64-bit, it's actually on the stack and also in a register. Right, and so what you can do is you can dump out the critical section object, and what you do is you go to each thread who owns it, and then you look at who he's waiting on. So you pull it out of the registers or you pull it out of the stack, the object number. Critical section object is a pointer, so you're looking for something CF something-ish. And then in this case you say, hey, I am thread, whatever it was, one something, I am waiting on 8D0, you go to the other guy, you do the same thing, and you'll see that the two of them
waiting
cyclic. Yeah, and you might have a three-way cyclic. Once again, the crit list extension in SLE EXT just showed you all of this on the screen straight away, but and that's how you look at critical sections. What we're going to do is, you know, repeat this episode and do it for the other objects next week. So we've got events still hanging around, semaphore still hanging around, and mutexes. The main problem that you get with those three is there is no thread owner, right? And so you cannot work out, who owns it directly like this. And what you have to do is you have to do a bit more hunting around. The other thing is it doesn't use memory objects; it uses handles, which is these low numbers like 100 or 101D0 or something. So a bit more sleuthing involved. And that's where we go. And that's it for this week. Once again, ask questions in the forum post.
Yeah, forum post, defragtools@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week.
Have a good week.